Hi, I'm Teresa. I'm an alcoholic. Thanks to Primary Purpose for continuing on. We're at 7, 8, 9. 7, humbly ask them to remove our shortcomings. How did I get there? Progressive willingness from 6. It kept progressing. My willingness, you know, it came and it went, but pain outweighed fear of change, and my progressive willingness got me to that state of readiness that I needed to be in to look at 7. And it says in the book, when ready, and I was ready, I pray the 7-step prayer. And when I prayed that prayer for the first time, I didn't realize the little implication in there is that I was standing before God exactly how I was in that present moment. And I didn't have to be perfect. I didn't have to achieve a goal to get there and ask for these things. It was, come as you are. And, the good and the bad and everything in between. And the things that, were good about myself and the things that I wanted him to remove about myself to become a better person. So that was, a kind of humbling experience to just, to lay it out there. And every time I prayed that, I got a good sense of humility to be right-sized, in God's eyes, and that he would accept me exactly the way I was at that moment. And you know what? It changes from moment to moment, even during the course of a day. I can ask for things to be removed, and I don't get to say when they're going to be removed or how they're going to be removed, And I guess that's a little added humility. If God sees fit that you should live with some of these defects, that's going to be a little extra work as you go along. But I was entirely ready to have them removed. And it made sense then, it hit me, in Bill's story when he says, I asked my friend to remove them root and branch. I knew the branches because the branches kept hitting everybody in the head. The root was here. It was in me. It was what was motivating me underneath, with those motives, the hidden motives that I got to see in the prior steps that we're not going to discuss. When I got there, I had to throw that in. I keep going in. When I got there, I just I had to. It wasn't about doing what I didn't want to do and not doing the character defects. It was more about really answering that the question, what can I do instead? Because prior to that, I didn't know I had choices. I didn't know I had options. I thought I was stuck into the way I was doing things. My old ideas were the only things that I saw. So I didn't know that I had a choice in this matter. So therein, lied the precursor for some change. And what could I do differently? What could I do better? And I didn't have to be stuck. And part of that was getting me unstuck from some of those old concepts. And it was there, I think, in doing 7, 8, 9, totally all together as a package also, that I started to experience that change that they talk about, that psychic change, sufficient enough to bring about recovery. It was here that I started it, and it was going to become, deeper as I moved forward. So I started to practice the direct opposite of the defect I wanted to get rid of. Instead of practicing my defects, because if I was going to ask God to remove it, I couldn't continue to practice it, because that would not work out. And, at any given time, I was asking for something to be removed, and it made zero sense to me to try to chase it down and put it back into practice in my life. It just wasn't working out. But it was a give and a take, I gave it to God and I took it back. I gave it to God and I took it back. So instead of having a two-way street with these character defects, I decided to make it a one-way street and just give it to God and leave it there. And if it came back up, I just gave it to him. I didn't try to manage it or to use it to my advantage or to, tweak it to, maybe I'll make this defect into an asset because that's not going to work out. So you could put lipstick on a pig. It's still a pig. Just don't do it. So I started to practice. And every morning, in my meditation, I asked to be granted, the love and tolerance to be not judgmental, because that, you know, whatever was very glaring for me at the time, I asked to be more of that. You know, empty me of the things that were objectionable, that I found objectionable, and fill me with things that were the direct opposite of the defects. When I first looked at the defects and the shortcomings, I didn't even realize that they were they were just, to me, personality traits. This is who I was. So then to even now look at the opposite of it, and it was just like an aha moment for some of them. I'm like, oh, that's what I could do instead. So that's really where I laid my emphasis in that step. And 8 was about the list and about the willingness. The list was really made from the inventory, but not so much as making the list and becoming willing, making the list and becoming willing. I needed to be sat down to be explained, what are these harms? What are these harms that I did? You know, there were the harms I did when I was drinking. Some of them were blatant, some of them not so blatant. I was a blackout drinker, so I don't even remember them all. Then there were the harms that I did when I was suffering and making other people suffer from my untreated alcoholism. So there were harms in sobriety, and I didn't want to look at them. You know, there were people in the rooms I harmed. I didn't want to look at that. You know, there were harms that I was continuing, present day. As I'm making the list, I'm like, oh, my God, I'm still doing this. And I had to put them on the list. And then, you know, people over the years that cropped up, and they had told me I had harmed them. And I had either no recollection of it due to blackout, or I just didn't even take them into account. You know, the unintended consequence. I had no, you know, if I didn't mean to harm you, I didn't harm you. You know, I didn't set out to do that, so too bad. Those people went on the list. So the list was a lot of people. And for me, I had to look at it and look at the harms and really see what harms I'd caused people. You know, not just the financial, not just the physical. It was the emotional stuff. It was the failed to do. You know, it was the stuff that you don't even look at right away. And I put them in 3. I had to do it. I needed a starting point. I needed a jumping off point where I said, these are the ones I'm going to do now. Those are the ones I see my part clearly. See my part. There's no way around it. And there's nothing that's going to, you know, get in my way of making those amends. And then there were the people on the later list. I see my part. I wasn't so happy about it, but I see my part. And, you know, those were like, I call them the next. When I'm done with these, because these people are my life. They're in my life on a continual daily basis. They're my family. They're my friends. They're in my house. They're at my job. You know, I need to really clear the wreckage here. Then the later people, you know, the not so. I'm not so happy about it, but I'm going to do it because you told me if I didn't, I may drink. So there's them. And then there's the never people. And that's where I got to watch my pride. And I got to watch my ego. And I got to watch the deep-seated resentment where I'm still angry. I'm angry at these people. And I'm looking at what they had done to me. And if they had done more to me than I did to them, they went on that list. And I prayed, and I prayed, and I prayed. And they all came off that list. There's nobody on the never list. And I hope to, you know, to pray, continual prayer that no one ever ends up on that list again. Because that place is awful. And that's where I'm playing judge and jury. I've sentenced you to be admonished, and you are not even worthy of my apology. I've put you in such a low place. And who am I? You know, I'm praying for love and tolerance, and I put you on a never list. But I had to. I had three separate places. I needed to start someplace, and, you know, that's what I did. And I had to watch, like I said, for my pride and my ego, and who ended up on the list and who didn't. I know it wasn't, you know, one of those. That good sponsorship in these steps is huge. Because I really needed the direction of a sponsor to say, you know, are you kidding me? That's a harm. That, you know, you harmed this person. Then when I got to make direct amends, direct. You know, I wanted to maybe send a little postcard, send a text message, you know, like the easier, softer way. If I could try to fly that past you, I would. I never really got away with it, but I tried. Those people from the now list, you know, the list that I made, I approached. And like I said, they're the people that I see on a daily basis. And family. And institutions that I had to deal with, You know, in 9, the big book has very explicit instructions for, there's a lot of direction in this step, I should say, you know, as far as domestic and criminal and financial and, you know, it kind of, you couldn't even fit a possibility in there that the big book doesn't cover, you know, doesn't give us a lot of wiggle room. So, you know, I followed those directions as close as I could. Financial, you owe the money, you pay it back. Just as simple as that, my sponsor says. If you owe it, you pay it. What if you can't? You pay what you can. You know, like every what if or but that I tried to throw in, she had the answer. She had the answer each time. And the answer came from here, you know. Who knew? You know, such a little book, you know. I searched my whole life to figure out how to live this thing, and there it is in this little book. So I got there, and my mother had passed away before I'd gotten sober, but I had my father to deal with. And you know what? I spoke of the disappointment and, you know, the things I had done to him and on and on. You know, I was the dysfunction in the family, and I knew it. So when I went to him and I explained, you know, I'm not drinking and I don't want to, and this is something that I need to do, you know, I need to, you know, come clean with you. He just stopped me in my tracks, and he has zero knowledge of AA. And he says, I don't care how you got sober, I don't care how you stay sober, as long as you don't drink, it's okay with me. And I knew, like, I wanted to, like, just hug him and run away and figure the amends was done. But I absolutely knew that, you know what, I had better really just, you know, do what I had to do in this situation. If I was giving out flowers at the airport and wasn't drinking, he would have been happy. But you know what? I had to tell him, you know, some stuff that was uncomfortable. It's uncomfortable for him to hear. And it was, you know what was uncomfortable for me to hear? It wasn't the money that I took from him. It wasn't the money that I borrowed and swore that I'd pay back and never did. It, you know, it wasn't any of these concrete things. It was the fact that I stole this man's sleep. I stole his serenity. You know, I 3 o'clock in the morning phone calls. Your daughter's been in an accident again. You know, how many times do you have to drag him down to the emergency room? So hearing that, how do you make amends for that? How? It's not like I can write you a check and say, I owe you $500, and here is $500, we're good, goodbye. That to me is ongoing. That's the, I'm truly sorry. You know, an amends is not just the apology, because I apologized for plenty of things, and my word was worth nothing. Because 15 minutes later, if you gave me the opportunity to do it again, self-seeking and selfish that I was, I'd do it. I would do it again. And most people in my life knew that. So when I issued you an apology, it was only to smooth over whatever was going on so I could get, you know, get to whatever what I really wanted. I was going to manipulate my way around it. So the apology in action is the amends for me. So the action part of the apology was to not engage in that harmful behavior any further, to be truly sorry for what I had done, and to take responsibility. And then the question, that was the uncomfortable question, because I said, what is there? Is there anything I could do to set this right with you? And he goes, no. And that's when he told me about, you know, the peace. And I was like... And he goes, but it's okay. But it's okay because you're not drinking now. All right, okay. And I still felt a little bit guilt when I walked out of there that I was let off the hook too easy. But I kept going. And you know what? That first one went well. And I received such compassion from him that it enabled me to continue to be courageous to go to the next one and the next one. And the next one. And you know what? It kept building up and building up. And by the time I even realized it, I'm into the later list and I'm looking at the nevers. I'm looking at them saying, maybe I can do this. You know, maybe I can. And you know what? That's how they came off that list. And I went to, you know, as many people as I could, you know, and before I started ringing doorbells, let me tell you, I had to sit down with my sponsor and discuss the nature of the amends to be made, you know, the nature of the amends to be made, and, you know, come to some type of agreement with that. And before and after each one, we had conversation So, you know, I would be grounded in knowing what's going on. Some of them I had to sit quiet and listen to the other person, because it says we're going to be hard on us, but not on them. We're going to be compassionate when it comes to them, considerate when it comes to them. To hear them tell me how I had harmed them, to be able to listen, right, for the first time. It's not all about me. Is it all about me? Well, yeah, I have to do this so I can overcome drinking, right? But I had to listen to them and, you know, hear it from their point of view. That being said, I wasn't going to be an emotional doormat to them either, right? Because now I'm working a program, and not everybody I'm going to make an amends to is working a program. So they're not going to have that in their mind. Institutions, you know, I went to that high school that I was thrown out of. I went back there, and I explained. I am an alcoholic. I didn't excuse my behavior. When I say I'm an alcoholic, it doesn't excuse my bad behavior because of drinking. It just sets it right. It sets it in motion that I'm going to try to set it right in the present, because that's all I have. I can't, you know, if I stop struggling when I'm doing this, and I'm asking God to remove my shortcomings, and I've made that list, and I'm willing to go to any lengths to stay sober, including making amends on the never list, and I'm out doing these good things, you know, I have to keep that, you know, that in the forefront of my mind. And some people will need to know, in fact, I am alcoholic, and I am going to AA, and I, you know, want to stay sober, and this is something I have to do. And that was something that I had told the people at the high school, the nuns. And I said, I would like to speak to some of the students, you know, if that's something that you'd allow me to do. And they, of course, had a little talk, you know. I was outside the room again, you know. But I'm not 16 anymore. I can handle it, you know. Was I still a little fearful in the hallway? Yes. 40-something years old? Yep. And, you know, they agreed. And they said, how do you want to do it? And I said, I'm just going to tell a very short part of my story when I was, you know, their age, and tell them, what happened, and, you know, what's going on now. And that's what I did. I spent the whole day, and I went from class to class to class, and had to be like 8 different classes. I ended up speaking to like 30 women, 30 young ladies at a time. And you know what? That was my amends to the school. Because I had to make an amends to that institution. I had no idea how. I wasn't writing them a check, right? So, because that was the one thing, you know, money can buy your way out of trouble. And I had to really think about out-of-the-box solutions to some of these amends. If they weren't financial, then you know, what could I do? And that's what I did. You know what? If it helped one girl, fine. If it planted the seed, fine. Win-win. You know, they win, I win. And I was able to walk away from that situation, and I was more free. I was free again. And everyone I did, I was free again, because these people held no power over me. You know, in doing this, you know, I spoke a little bit about humility, and I have to realize that, you know, of me, I have no power. And that's why it's, you know, we're humbly asking him to remove our shortcomings, because I have to ask him, and he's the one who has all power. And I have to keep seeking that power. From me, I have zero power. And I can't remove these defects and these shortcomings on my own. I have to keep continually asking, and, you know, putting them in place. And they crop up. They still crop up, and I still ask. You know, the effort is in the asking. The effort is in the continual vigilance to these things going on in my life. It's like kind of like whack-a-mole. One goes down, another one comes up. One goes down, another one comes up. And, you know, I learned it early in sobriety. You want to see all your character defects at work at the same time? Get in a relationship. They'll all come out. And it's like miracle grow, you know, for your character defects. And, you know, if you're unable to identify your own character defects, your partner will absolutely identify them for you. So, yes, you know, that's, you know, the good standby of, you know, keeping away from that is because we have to know ourselves. And in knowing myself well, becoming free, you know, having all these things, you know, happen in the process, that psychic change started to occur. I started to look at, you know, the world differently. I started to look at it in a new light. You know, instead of, you know, trying to suck everything I possibly could out of it, you know, for my own pleasure, I was like, what can I bring to the plate here? What can I give? And, you know, such a change in mindset from these few actions. We're not even in double digits yet, and my whole life is changed, it's turned around. And I remember them once saying, you know, come to AA, we'll get you your life back. I'm like, I don't want that life, please. And that exactly what had happened already, even at this stage, I had a new life. And I was reaping the benefits and the rewards of that new life by following the simple program. And, you know, that's what I did. And last week I shared quickly about the one promise I wanted, because we're at the 9-step promises now, right? And the one promise is I from the get-go, all I wanted was that fear of people to leave me. Because I couldn't look at you in the eye. I couldn't answer you. It completely, like, terrorized. People terrorized me. And you know what? After the amends and when I was done, I got to read the 9-step promises, because I'm up to that part in the book. I read it for the first time. I read it with new eyes. I read it with a clean perspective. And you know what? I had to admit, at some point in that time, all of those promises had come true. Not all at once. They all didn't stay. They came and went, like the character defects. But they all had come true at some certain point. And that fear of people, it didn't terrorize me anymore. It didn't paralyze me into not doing things. You know, because fear can paralyze me into not doing good things. So it didn't have the hold on me, and that's when I knew I was free. But also in reading that, that wasn't even the most important one. And I was so blinded to it, it didn't even make sense to me. It wouldn't have made sense until I read it that after I was done with the amends, that it was so much more special to me, excuse me, that I realized God had been doing for me what I had been unable to do for myself, and continued to this entire time. And that promise comes true every day. Every day that I wake up and I meditate and I pray to Him and I ask Him for help, that promise comes true every day. Unbelievable. If you would have told me that back in the beginning when I was somewhere over here, I would have said, you're crazy. I want the fear of people to leave me, because that was something tangible. Now, I have a God in my life that I cooperate with, that I don't work against, you know, that I turn my will over to, and He gives me all this power, because it's only from Him I have any. Incredible. Psychic change? Maybe. Sustained recovery? So far, yes. And that's all from me. Thanks.